Well, it is Saturday, it is 3 p.m., and it is time for Air Olympia. On this week's show, we will be interviewing my friend Connie about prescription drugs and how they are destroying America's youth. We'll be talking about the Citizens Commission on Human Rights and a program called Teen Stream. And we will also have a call-in interview from my good friend Henry Noble, like usual. And we'll talk about the rally that happened on President's Day. So stick around. This is Air Olympia. And if you're hungry, here in about an hour and a half, Food Not Bombs is going to be feeding at the Timberland Regional Library across the street from Media Island. So show up at the Timberland Regional Library about 4:30 and eat some awesome vegan food. Air Olympia is produced live in the KOWA studio here in beautiful Olympia, Washington, Cascadia. What kind of shoes does a black girl wear? Well, only boots of feather. Let them fly to New York town. Tell me about the weather. Tell me about the weather. So this is another episode of Air Olympia. We moved our time back from 2 to 3, so we'll be doing only a one-hour show twice a week every Saturday and Sunday from 3 to 4, bringing you all the news that you need to know to get the fire started in your belly and make that fire manifest out here in the actual corporeal world, because that's what we need, because the world is getting crazier and crazier and crazier by the minute. But, you know, Olympia, Washington is an awesome town. And there's lots of ways to distract yourself from the crazy tyranny of capitalist society. And one of those ways is the Ole Old Time Fest, which is happening right now at Evergreen. It'll be over at 5. And there's singing, calling, banjo, fiddle, guitar, and kids' workshops. And all that is free. So if you want to learn how to play the banjo or the fiddle or the guitar, then go to Evergreen about right now. And you've got 2 hours to do that. And then tonight at The Loft, 525 Cherry Street, Small Change String Band, The Tall Boys, and Atlas String Band from Seattle will be playing at 7 p.m. 18 and younger is free. Older than 18 is $10. And also tonight at the China Clipper, Crush Your Enemies will be playing. And if you want to go see a movie today, then 4 p.m. is the Saturday matinee and at the Olympia Film Society, and they are playing, let's see, The Curse of Were-Rabbit, and then at 6:30 is 35 Shots of Rum, and at 9 p.m. is Fanny Alexander. And matinee prices are $7 general admission and $4 for OFS members, so be sure to go see The Curse of Were-Rabbit in about an hour right after you get done listening to this show. And so, I have some guests here in the studio today. As always, we have Mr. Johnny Love, and we have a new guest in the studio. Well, you were here last time, weren't you? So you're not technically a new guest. We have Connie. What's your last name?
Huggett. My name is Connie Huggett.
Wait, your name is what?
My name is Connie Huggett.
Okay, there we go. We had some technical difficulties. Excuse us, everyone. And what brought you to Air Olympia this afternoon, Miss Huggett?
Well, actually, me and you had talked before. We're going to be talking about my experience with medication and what brought that on. And we're also going to be talking about, what is it called again?
Teen Screen and all that?
Yeah.
Yeah, Teen Screen is a program that that is geared toward getting youth from the age of 13 to 18 in high school and middle school to become prescribed to prescription drugs of all sorts. And I understand that you were diagnosed as bipolar when you were younger,
mm-hmm.
and then prescribed to all sorts of crazy, mind-altering, you know, spiritually corrosive, disgusting pills after that. And can you tell us about that a little bit?
All right, well, when I was 14, I had had a fall over with some things, and they decided to send me to a mental hospital. When I got in there, they weren't quite sure what was going on with me. they decided to put me on a few pills to help me sleep at night called trazodone. Well, that was kind of a bad experience. After I took it, I was seeing people in the room and whatnot, and so I talked to my doctor the next day, and they decided to just prescribe me an even hardcore pill called Seroquel. That put me right to sleep and whatnot. I got out of the hospital about 10 days later, saw a doctor, and it took them about 2 months to diagnose me with bipolar. It took me 2 doctors to find that out, and so after I was diagnosed, sent me to another doctor, and I was prescribed many pills.
So they prescribed you to clonazepam and Seroquel, you said, right? And,
yeah.
And I used to take clonazepam for other reasons, and I can tell you right now that it does absolutely nothing good for the human thought process and the, you know, cognitive engine that rests in between all of our ears. And so what do you think the purpose of prescribing you to these drugs was?
Well, honestly, nothing was helping me at this time, at the beginning of my diagnosis. It didn't really help with anything. It took a long time to actually find out what helped me and stuff. So, really, it just messed me all up and made everything worse.
Well, what did they say was the reasoning behind prescribing any of these drugs?
They pretty much, I was pretty crazy back then, I just must say right now. They didn't really give me a reason. They just, like, gave me pill bottle after pill bottle and whatnot, and they honestly had no idea what they're doing. I honestly think that it was more behind the money making than it was actually helping me.
Well, luckily for us, there's a group called the Citizens Commission on Human Rights. And if you'd like to contact the Citizens Commission on Human Rights Seattle chapter, then dial 877-448-8517. That's a toll-free number, and you can talk to someone there. But my tongue is going to work right from here on out. Get used to it. Now, the Citizens Commission on Human Rights was established in 1969, and it has done a whole lot of research on the American and European tendency to prescribe people pills and such so that they can deal with a society that is mentally and spiritually corrosive and unnatural in more ways than not. And it turns out the screening of children for mental illness is not without precedent. It parallels used in Nazi Germany to weed out the inferior elements of society. In 1920, German psychiatrist Alfred Hoche published the book Permission to Destroy Life Unworthy of Life, in which he recommended that a commission order the identification and euthanasia of dead weight characters. Less than 20 years later, a register was compiled and submitted to the government on all those who suffered from a variety of mental disorders. 1930. And this was the beginning of the time when people started defining certain mental disorders, which today they are no longer euthanizing the people who are supposedly afflicted by these disorders, but they are just prescribing them to pills like they did Connie here. And in 1930, Ernst Rudin, founder of psychiatric genetics and an architect of the Holocaust, addressed the International Congress on Mental Hygiene in Washington, D.C. An architect of the Holocaust in 1930 addressed the International Congress on Mental Hygiene in Washington, D.C. Well, where he called for a united eugenic approach to weed out those known to bear hereditary taint. Heading the list of defects was one U.S. eugenicist Heading the list of defects was something that one U.S. eugenicist would later define as attention deficit disorder, or ADD. So I guess I had ADD. Or I have ADD. I guess we're all lucky I guess we're lucky that we got diagnosed with ADD in I got diagnosed with it in the 90s and here in the millennia rather than in the 30s, or else we would be euthanized, at least in Germany. And in 1930, as a result of psychiatric eugenics movement, the U.S. schools screened children regularly, and those classified as feeble-minded were sent to institutions. In 1940, at the first conference of the German Society for Child Psychiatry and Therapeutic Education, attended by the elite of Nazi psychiatry, Paul Schroeder, professor of psychiatry, stated, "Child psychiatry has to help integrate hereditarily damaged or inadequate children for their own and the public's good, to be strict and resolute about the sacrifice of those deemed predominantly worthless and uneducable." In 1940 to 1945, British psychiatrist J.R. Rees and Canadian psychiatrist G. Brock Chisholm, who co-founded the World Federation for Mental Health, described the goals of psychiatrists. "We have made a useful number of professions. The two easiest of them, naturally, are the teaching profession. And having swallowed all manners of poisonous certainties fed us by school teachers, if the race is to be freed from its crippling burden of good and evil, it must be psychiatrists who take the original responsibility." Well, in the 1970s, Professor Manfred Mueller Kuppers, a member of the German Society for Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, claimed that there should be no referral to reform school, no provisions for school attendance without child psychiatric evaluations. In 2003, influenced by psychiatrists and psychologists, the U.S. New Freedom Commission on Mental Health recommended the early detection of mental health problems in children and adults through routine and comprehensive testing and screening. So we know what Nazi Germany's goal in almost all of their, you know, studies of human behavior were. And what Nazi Germany's goal in all their studies of human behavior, it was to create a type of human that would have no problem functioning in the insanely tyrannical, totalitarian, and I don't think anyone would have a problem with me using the word evil state that Nazi Germany wished to make the world state. And so back then they would develop all these different processes for screening people for certain psychiatric disorders, and then they would take the people who were supposedly afflicted by them, and I'm sure if they were white and German, then they would have a different option for them, but if they were not white and German, then they would euthanize them. Now today, these same practices have been applied to psychiatric evaluations in the United States. And rather than euthanizing children who seem to have certain mental processes that would cause them to be a danger to the state, meaning that they have certain mental processes that might not allow them to function as a you know, little cog in the machine, they just prescribe these kids to drugs and make them feel isolated from their society at school, mm-hmm. and do other things to render them incapable of changing or altering the society that's been created around them. And that seems to be what they try to do to you, you know?
Yeah, you know, there is a lot of people with mental illnesses that can handle it on their own without medication. And I met a few people like that, and they seem to be doing fine in life. So medication really isn't always the answer.
I don't think medication is ever the answer.
Me being one of the people who can handle things by themselves, I don't need medication. I never did. I was on antidepressants once. I was on anti-bipolars. I was on antipsychotics, anti-schizophrenics. It's ridiculous because I never really needed it. I never really did. I mean, you don't see me walking down the street with a bloody axe in my hand and a decapitated head in the other. I'm fine. I am perfectly fine, but I'm more sane than most people out there.
I was on Depakote for a while when I was 18. And,
horrible drug.
Yeah, I hated it. I am a writer and a musician, and I was more into my writing then. I basically, now I consider my, if you were to ask me my occupation, I would say revolutionary or wizard. But then if you asked me my occupation, I would have said poet. So I stopped taking Depakote because it didn't allow me to feel my full spectrum of emotions and thereby stopped me from writing. So I stopped taking it. But what they basically gave me that drug for was because I wouldn't function in school, you know. I wasn't, I didn't do my homework. I didn't see the point in participating with a system that was obviously just trying to brainwash me into being another little slave or another little soldier who would go out and kill, you know, do whatever that the goal of capitalism can that baffles me, the goal of capitalism. But we will go beyond that. I didn't take the drug because it seemed unnecessary, and it was obvious to, and it was unnecessary, and it was obvious to me that they were just trying to give me a drug to sedate me so that they could enslave me.
Well, one of my experiences, there was a rumor going around saying that vitamins don't work, and I'm pretty sure it was the government saying that, so you wouldn't take the vitamins and buy their chemical drugs. So there's a lot of natural remedies for everything that may work better than chemical drugs themselves.
But they don't want to tell us those natural remedies, and they don't want to have us be educated, and they don't want us to be healthy. Do y'all know why?
That's pretty controversial.
Well, this is Air Olympia, so you say whatever you want.
All right. They want to make money, I guess.
Well, they want to. Well, they don't want to make money. What they want. Money is a tool for them to enslave us. That's all it is.
Mm-hmm.
Because back in the day, you had feudal society. And in feudal society, you had the lord and all the serfs, you know? And all the serfs were completely subservient to the lord, and there was no question about it, because they just plowed the fields and got the food and gave it to the lord, and he gave them their ration, and that was all there was. You know what I mean? And there was no money to deal with it. It was basically just slavery. It was basically like living on master's plantation, mm-hmm. you know? And then all of a sudden, this merchant society comes up, and people start moving into these towns. And in these towns, they can go and they can amass independent wealth. And what independent wealth does is it gives them the chance to one day, perhaps, rise up as high in the society as the lord, and perhaps buy some land and be in control of your own destiny. And so the monarchs and everyone, they were threatened by this right off. And so what they did was they decided to set up the capitalist society, which would develop out of feudal society, in such a way as to ensure that, yes, money would provide those who were hardworking with a certain amount of control over their own destiny, meaning that, yes, you could acquire, you know, an amount of money and become somewhat self-sustaining and have a little bit of power and not have to depend on the Lord. But they didn't want everyone to do that. They wanted only a select few people to do that. They really didn't want anyone to do that, but they knew that that it was inevitably going to happen. So they set up the capitalist society in such a way so that only select few people would ever rise to the top of it and would ever amass enough money to even come anywhere near rivaling the monarch's power. And so basically, the way that they set up the capitalist society then has been carried over today. And so the people who run this society, they don't care about money. They don't care about money because they have land and guns. And if you have land and guns, you don't need money because you can farm your land and whatever. And so the only reason that they have money is so that we, running around out here, will think that one day we're going to amass enough money to rival their power, when really they have set up the society in such a way as to render us incapable of doing that. And the way that they have done that is through something called social Darwinism, meaning that if you keep the underclasses unhealthy, it's survival of the fittest. Darwinism is survival of the fittest. And so what it says is if you keep the you control who becomes fittest, and if you keep the underclasses unhealthy, stupid, incapable of providing themselves with food and all the sustenance that they need to sustain life, then basically they will be too weak, too stupid, too ignorant and ill-informed, and basically incapable of ever challenging your power. And so that is why they want us to be unhealthy. That is why they don't want us to know about natural remedies, and that is why they prescribe us to all kind of crazy drugs when we do anything that that makes them think that we might slip out of this little box they've designed for us.
Yeah, there's the mentally ill, but also as far as medications go, they're making a lot of money with the cancer patients and the AIDS patients, hepatitis patients, you know, and it's just crazy. There's a lot of different ways that I'm sure there is to help these things, like such as natural remedies.
Yeah, and it is pretty funny the way that the entire system is set up. You are right. They do want money. But they don't want money for money's sake. They want money for, because it's a useful tool of enslavement. Mm-hmm. They want money. Money is a means to an end, and the end is enslavement. And so what they've done now is they've set up the system in such a way so that they ship almost all of our food here from, you know, foreign sources, and they make us so that we don't have enough income to buy healthy food. And so the food that we have to buy is carcinogenic, kills us. They know that it's carcinogenic. It's probably more expensive for them to make this kind of food than it is for them to just grow apples.
I've noticed in like Italy and everywhere in Europe, it's cheaper to eat healthy in Europe. And it's like, if you want to eat unhealthy, you go into a McDonald's in Europe and buy a Big Mac for 20-something bucks, but here it's like a get it off the dollar menu.
Yeah, it's almost impossible to eat healthy here. I try to eat healthy off of my food stamps, and I end up broke by like, I get them in on the 5th, I end up broke by the 9th.
But I totally understand that.
It's just crazy. But I think that my theory is that the reason that they make it hard for us to eat healthy, because we have to understand that the corporations that manage these giant food stores in which we go, you know, they talk to the people in the government. They're all linked up and working together, and so they do set it up. And the way that it is set up in America, it's not like by coincidence that health food is so much more expensive than disgusting ramen noodles. It's like very, very intentional that it is. And the reason that they've set it up in that way is because of social Darwinism. They want to keep the underclasses weak so that we will never challenge their authority.
Okay, so what is the low class in America? I've never really understood that whole thing. Is it like the rich and the poor or what? What do you think?
Well, are you about to get me into Marxism 101 here on Air Olympia? Okay, Marxism 101. Oh, Johnny Love had a comment first.
I just completely forgot what the question was, actually. Sorry, guys, I'm a little spacey. What was the topic?
We were talking about... Okay, Johnny Love, give the microphone back to Connie. Okay. So, Marxism 101. Connie just asked me, what is the definition of lower and upper class? Well, if you were to ask a capitalist what the definition of lower and upper class is, he would say, or she would say... More than likely, he would say, well, it's dependent on how much income you have.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, blah, blah, blah. If you're in, there's poverty level, which I live in poverty level. I live off of food stamps. Poverty level is like less than $100 a month or something like that. And then there is lower middle class or lower class. And then there is upper lower class. And then there is middle lower upper class. And then there's all these classes based on what store you shop at and what kind of car you drive and all this stupid crap. You know, but all that is a bunch of nonsense because, so let's say that you were born in lower middle class, like my dad, or lower low class, like my dad, and you worked your way into upper middle class, like my dad, then you might be under the illusion that, wow, this whole American dream thing is real because I've sold a bunch of cars and now my son's wearing Nike shoes and I can, you know, he's going to grow up and then he's going to go to college and he's going to climb up even more than me and then maybe his son will be a senator. But see, actually, that's a bunch of nonsense because what happened, my dad worked his whole life, working his ass off, and then he lost all that money when the economy crashed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and now he's bankrupt, and now he's everything in his house, he's in debt for.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so it's a bunch of nonsense. And so the actual way that you determine who is in what class is you say, well, that person owns land, that person owns a factory, and all these people work in their factory. And the people who own the means of production, the people who own the farms, the people who own the roads, the people who own the military, the people who own the factories that produce food and clothing and medical supplies and all of these things, these are the ones who are in charge because they own it.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the building where everyone goes to work, it belongs to them. And they are called the bourgeoisie. They're the aristocrats. They are the ones who came over here from Europe and who have ties to royal blood and whatever.
Yeah.
And then they're the ones who can trace their family back to whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have everyone else. And everyone else doesn't mean, like, you know, us here at Media Island. And then, like, we're a different class than the people down the street who have a bigger house than us. No. We are of the same class of the people down the street who have a bigger house than us because we are both rent. We are both like paying the same person. Like, okay. So the different classes besides the bourgeoisie. Let's say you're working in a factory, and let's say that you have let's say that you make $100 a day or something, and your supervisor makes $500 a day. Now, a capitalist, someone who is uninformed and ignorant by the design of the state would say, oh, well, they are higher up in society than I am. No, they're not higher up in society than you are because you're both working for the same bourgeoisie fool, capitalist, fat cat. You're both working in the same factory. Neither of you can walk outside and take control of your own destiny and decide not to work in that factory anymore and still be fine. You're both working for someone whose goal is to enslave you at all costs. And so the thing that defines class, if you want to look at it in a rational way and not in a propagandic, brainwashing designed by the American government way, is who owns means of production, who owns factories, land, road and waterways, you know, military, all that, and who works for the people who own that means of production. And this is called the bourgeoisie, or the land-owning, means of production-owning class, and the proletariat, which are everyone else, everyone who works for them while they do no work. And what Marx would say is that when all of the proletariat people, meaning the people who, the people at the top of the economic ladder and at the bottom of the economic ladder, if all of us proletariat would come together and realize that we are being enslaved by this elite few who own the means of production, then we could take back the means of production, live in a classless society, and all be free and not have to worry about any of this nonsense anymore. But in order to do that, we're going to have to stop taking prescription drugs that tell us a million reasons why we shouldn't do that.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I had a doctor, I'm pretty sure she was contracted with the pharmacy for as many medications that she prescribes, the more money she gets. And I found a doctor that doesn't seem to do that. And it's just, if you're going to go to medical school, I mean, at least have some care for your patients and whatnot, and not just, I mean, the doctor I have right now obviously isn't doing it for the money. She is actually a very smart person, very good doctor, and she has been filled up with patients since God only knows when. She hasn't been taking new patients for, of course, God only knows when. So she obviously is doing a pretty good job if she's not losing any patients.
Well, it sounds like you found a good one there. So I would say stick with that doctor and don't take any more prescriptions.
Yeah, the doctor before her, I was at least on 15 different pills a day. And the doctor I have right now, I only need to take one pill a day.
That sounds good. Well, we're going to close out this segment. And, you know, a lot of you are probably asking, I hear you, D. I hear you, Air Olympia, you know. I mean, you got a lot of good ideas, but what do you want? What do you want? Well, here you go. Free freedom, that's what I want. That is what I want. What do y'all want? What do y'all want? What do y'all want here, Johnny and Connie?
That rhymed. That was awesome. What do you want? What do you want out of life?
Just to be successful. That's all I want, really.
Well, what is successful?
You know, you know, see, if I win the lottery, I'm not going to be the kind of person to live large. And I've been told by many psychics that I would win the lottery.
Psychics.
But if not, you know, I just want to get, you know, just a simple job. You know, I'm going to school for media communications and stuff. Get a job in that. You know, just not living too large at all, but being successful and having money in my own place to live and not being living off the government.
So you want to be free. Sounds like you want to be free. That's awesome. That's what we all want. We're waiting for Mr. Henry Noble to call in. He should be calling in here in about any second. So, Johnny, why don't you tell us what you want out of life, out of the universe?
Out of life in the universe? Well, I'd have to say freedom, man. That's all I want is freedom.
Koa. Is this Henry?
Yeah.
What's up, man?
Sunny day here in Seattle. How about you?
It's an awesome day here in Olympia, man.
Did you say sunny or funny?
You said sunny.
Sunny, like sunshine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's really sunny down here. It's pretty awesome. I'm having a great day. We're having a great show, man. We had Marxism 101 just a second ago with our guest, Connie.
Great.
Yeah. Yep. So what'd you think of that rally on Monday?
Well, I thought it was kind of interesting being among 6,000 people and I got a chance to talk to quite a few and really liked signs people had. It was about taxing the rich. And I was not really happy to not hear a message like that come from the podium.
Oh, yeah. I seem to have a strong disconnect between the groups who were promoting the event and the groups who had tables at the event near the back of the crowd, and the and the actual speakers who were on the stage. Did you notice that?
I think it's very interesting because when I got there, a man gave me a button that said revenue. And I said, what does this mean? Yeah. And he couldn't really explain it to me, and he went on and gave out buttons to other people. And I said, well, I'm here to tax rich people. I don't know what revenue means.
Yeah, it's like it's one of those words like hope or change,
exactly.
You know.
No, like... I agree with you. And then we learned a little bit about what revenue means because the governor came out with a proposal to tax things like bottled water and candy.
Yeah.
So this is going to solve our problems.
Well, for all of those people, all of our listeners who think you might be going insane right now, revenue means money. That's what revenue means. And we had a bunch of people. So there was this rally on Monday. It was promoted heavily by Sisters Organized for Survival, Freedom Socialist Party, Radical Women, socialist parties left and right were promoting this event. And then we get to the event, and you know, it was Monday at the Capitol, President's Day, 6,000 people. It was awesome, but they're standing up on stage and they're saying these really empty words like revenue. They just kept saying revenue over and over and over again. And if you're wondering, well, Freedom Socialist, it doesn't sound like they would be saying revenue. Well, they weren't. It was Senator Ed Murray and his crew who were saying revenue. So how did that happen, Henry, man?
I can fill in a little bit. A year ago on President's Day in 2009, a union of state employees that's part of the Federation of State Employees, Washington Federation of State Employees, Local 304, that represents some state employees, called a rally at the Capitol. And I went, and there were maybe 300 people came to that rally to demand jobs and demand that the state fund services. And at that time, they were trying to get other unions to come, and it didn't work. But the rally was pretty spirited. And so this year, Council 28 of the state employees, which Local 304 is part of, as well as others are part of, called this rally, and other unions took part in the rally, and it turns out that the coordinating group for this was called Washington Fuse, F-U-S-E, Fuse Washington, and it had a very mild message that it wanted to put out in contrast to the teabaggers. Because for people who didn't get down to the Capitol last Monday, there were two rallies that in the papers, in the News Tribune and in some of the other papers, they're called dueling rallies. Right at 10 o'clock, there was a rally of teabaggers and right-wingers and other folks who are against government and don't want any taxes, and they were really loud.
Libertarians.
And there were like 2,000 of them. And then we came a few hours later, and there was a lot more of us. And so we were calling that we want more government funding, right? We want services. We want to protect people who've lost their jobs and let students stay in school and not raise tuitions and all that kind of stuff.
And it was...
And so, I'm sorry. You're trying to say something. Go ahead.
I was just going to say it was a really spirited rally, and it was awesome to see so many people taking an interest in making sure that their government takes an interest in them, and a lot of people recognizing the faults of the system, a lot of people coming together in open forum to see how strong their numbers are, and really make it seemed like it was a good starting point for making some serious change and some serious reform and really altering the way that this continent is ran. But But you know, those little stickers that just say revenue on them, it's kind of to me, and it doesn't really seem like that is the answer. And it's no surprise that that answer was being proposed to us by the same people who got us in this mess to begin with, the governing elite, the Democratic Party. Senator Ed Murray was one of the ones who was saying all this. And I've got some really good sound clips from this rally. Would you like to hear something? Would you like to hear Senator Ed Murray, Henry?
Yeah, go for it.
So let's do the hard work here in Olympia, and then on to November, and let's win. You know, I don't want to burst any. I don't mean to burst anybody's bubble. A lot of people were really excited at this rally. Obviously, a lot of people came out for a common cause. Obviously, it is a very important cause. Basic health and funding to higher education and all that is very, very important. And there are a lot of people really spirited trying to do something about it. But this just reminds me of the year 2008, when a lot of people were really, really spirited about changing American foreign policy. And they got really excited about this Democratic, politician named Barack Obama, and they said, "Well, we're gonna all go out and vote for Barack Obama. We're gonna do this and that. We're gonna work really hard to fund Barack Obama's campaign." And Barack Obama has these one word slogans, you know, kind of like revenue, like hope, change, you know. And then all of a sudden, Barack Obama gets elected, and he sends 30,000 troops to Afghanistan. So I'm just wondering, what do you think Ed Murray's intentions and all this are?
Well, I think that the Democrats are looking toward re-election in the next elections, And I think they're also, and part of that is looking to protect the big business in this state. And the labor movement is going along with it because they're also trying to protect the Democrats, which is what's very irritating here. But I think that what you said, some good things that come out of people going to a rally like that, is that we need to be building a movement. A movement will change things, not individuals. And I think that we need to be demanding what we can get back of our money that these legislators are doling out or not doling out, at the same time as working to build a system that gets rid of capitalism. And if you just had a Marxism 101 class, you probably got some inklings of what that could be. The fact that the people at the podium were just like Barack Obama, didn't say things that people supporting him were saying. I mean, can you just imagine that people a year ago were saying, we want more nuclear reactors?
We want extreme rendition legalized.
In Georgia, this is his answer to being green. It's just insane. Well, let me just tell you about a good thing that happened this morning. Representative Scott White, who represents the district that I live in, held a community meeting, and there were maybe 100 people at it. And Helen Gilbert from SOS spoke up about the need to tax rich people, and the place really erupted. I mean, that's what people want.
That's...
And then somebody said, oh, there's going to be an initiative that's going to start circulating soon that calls for, I'm not quite sure, but something about more taxes. Which means that we're pressing the legislators to do their job and this sort of thing, and they don't want to do it because they're afraid to do it. So they say, why don't you pass an initiative? And there's an initiative going to be happening to tax, and I don't know what, but tax more, that needs to be taxing the rich people. So they've ducked it. The legislators have ducked their responsibility. They'll go along with something like what the governor proposed about taxing kids' candy and bottled water. And they'll say, okay, all you people out there, if you want more taxes on rich people or corporations or something else, you've got to file an initiative. And you know how the initiative system works, where you've got to get a certain number of signatures on it. So all over the state, it's going to be people working signatures on an initiative to put it on the ballot.
To try to bed some humanity out of these folks.
They're doing their job in legislating. They're saying, okay, you guys do it.
Oh, man. Obviously, there's a lot of different ways to go about this whole thing of ending capitalism and the current way that we do government in America. And maybe the best thing for this rally is, you know, we had some of the suits coming together with some of the other folks, everybody just kind of sitting around and addressing the problem. And so hopefully we can all work together and figure out what is the best way to do away with this whole system. And I'm not going to pretend that I know the best way to do it, but I'll tell you one thing, and I think Henry will agree with me, standing up on a stage and saying revenue over and over again is not the best way to do it. Would you think?
I think your parallel of standing up on there and saying hope and change isn't going to do it, I think is really, really well said. I think you just really did it. And so it didn't. All it did was show that there's some people out there who are opposed to what the teabaggers are calling for. Now, I don't know, in the previous part of the show, did you talk at all about what some of the teabag people were calling for?
No, we didn't.
Because I'm not totally surprised, but I saw a whole table of people who were blaming everything on illegal immigrants. And I saw a bunch of people with signs, anti-abortion signs.
Well, I saw a whole table full of them at the at the Wolf Lodge a little while. No, never mind that. I found a whole table full of people like that in Flagstaff, Arizona, a couple of years ago. But
well, they're here, and they're intermingled with some of the people who are really upset about things and don't know what to do about it. And somebody said, well, the thing you got to do about it is stop government. So there's some people there who I think are really mixed up. But in there are also some really right-wing Nazis and fascists. And the stuff they're calling for is really pretty scary. And it means that we need to not only be pushing for what we want, but we got to be looking to stand up to these folks.
Fascists and Nazis, are they from Eastern Washington, would you say?
Well, there have been some local ones, but I didn't get any flyers from any groups, and they keep pretty close there, unless you get into a debate with somebody. But they may have. It's been a while, but we've gotten buses together and gone out there to Coeur d'Alene back when the Aryan Nations was organizing there, and they'd call a rally meeting or a march downtown, and we'd speed over there and have a counter demonstration. And also, anyway, they've been closer, but they also work with these, what's it called, these vigilante groups that go on the border, right? They're going to try and catch illegal immigrants coming into the city, really nasty folks. So at the same time as we're pursuing what we want, we need to be standing up against this stuff.
Yeah, and man, it seems like this fight will never, ever, ever end, Henry, you know, but at least we're all coming together and finally starting to really realize what fight it is that we're fighting. So we got to let you go, Henry. We've only got 8 minutes of show left.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Thanks for calling in, brother. We'll see you next time.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Yeah. Hold on, Miss Connie has something to say.
Okay, there's probably going to be a lot of people standing outside after I say this to probably beat me up, but for all the problems we have with, like, presidency and government, this is exactly why I'm not registered to vote and I don't vote.
Wait, you should have talked into the other mic. we're screwing up today. Oh, Lord. Well, here we go. Well, here's some things that were said at the rally, and we're just going to leave you with this, and you can make your own assertion about it.
If you'd like to make a call, hang up and try again.
I'm here at the rally, and I see this is a brother who has a sign that says protect our yes on revenue. What does that mean, yes on revenue?
I don't want any more cuts to higher education, because our family... I've been poor my entire life. I am not what you would call a privileged sort. So to look at school and better myself is fantastic. But if that's cut, if tuition rates are increased, I just won't have enough.
Yeah. So you're saying that the state needs more money, basically, to fund this. And so it's yes on... Revenue means money, right? Yes on money.
I think a redirection of revenue would be...
Yeah. Well, I would say yes on money, too, but that would be so that I could obtain it and then set it on fire. Now, these people might say yes on money, but their reason, I assure you, would be completely different from mine. Don't you think that maybe you should ask them what they're going to do with the money once they say yes, once they get you all to agree to say yes to it?
Yeah. I think careful consideration of all matters is important. We can't just ask for money and then not follow up on where they go with it. I think we do have to take the whole walk.
I think we should just ask for education, or better yet, educate ourselves.
That's a good point, because I have educated myself for a lot of my life, and I now am completely lacking in math skills, because that's just one thing I was not able to learn to teach myself. I want to go into a field of creative writing, but unless I get my math up to par, then that'll be completely impossible.
Well, if this does not...
The whole point I was driving at was teaching yourself is not completely possible. There is a point where you do need help.
Well, if this doesn't work out for you, contact Air Olympia and the Rainbow Family Warriors, and we'll find a mathematician for you, and you'll know algebra whether or not the state has anything to do with it, okay?
Thank you.
I love you, brother.
Paralympia on Toa 106.5, and I am here at the President's Day rally, where a lot of groups are rallying for various causes to do all mainly reactionary work to the proposed budget plan. And this is a person. What's your name?
My name is Mike Hickey, and I'm the Political Action Committee Chair for the American Federation of Teachers, Seattle Local 1789.
Cool. And I see that you have one of these green stickers that says revenue. And I'm just wondering, I hear them say, we have to save the state of Washington education. We need revenue. And so they're just saying revenue and people are yelling. I'm wondering, what exactly does the whole revenue thing mean?
I'll tell you exactly what it is. We have the most regressive tax structure in this state than of all the other states in the union. The people at the lowest end of the socioeconomic scale pay more than any other state in the union per capita. So what we have to do is we have to make sure that the loopholes are closed and corporations pay the same amount of fair taxes that the rest of us are expected to pay. I don't know if your audience knows this, but Microsoft pays taxes in the state of Nevada because they have no state taxes. And so they move that tax revenue that we should be getting, to the state of Nevada. So there's a complete lack of balance. And we're not asking for something that they can't provide. We're asking that the rich do their pay frighten. I think another thing that we're doing is trying to bring the message. I'm an educator, and I'm bringing the message to my students. I have seen more students. I've been coming down here on President's Day for many years. I've never seen this many students. Students don't have a voice in Olympia. They don't come down here and lobby and talk to the legislators. Now they're starting to do that. Now they're starting to understand that the rich kids are going to be able to afford this escalating tuition. The poor kids are going to be able to get financial aid, and the middle are going to be squeezed out. So students are down here, and they're talking to the legislators, and they're making it known that they want to go to college. We need to have an educated workforce, and that's not happening if they continue to escalate tuition. And tuition, now the state legislature is considering not even forcing state schools like Washington State and the University of Washington to even have to clear tuition increases through the state legislature. They're considering giving them the power to just raise tuition as much as they want. So at some point, students have to pay for their education, true. But at another time, when the corporations are getting so many tax breaks and tax loopholes, there's just a lack of equity.
Do you think that the Washington state legislators are familiar with social Darwinism?
I don't know. I mean, I think a lot of the legislators mean well. I think there's maybe a disconnect between Seattle, Tacoma, Olympia, and maybe some of the eastern part of the state, where they're more agrarian, more agricultural in nature, and therefore more conservative. I don't know if they believe in social Darwinism. I don't know if they would understand that term. But I understand that term, and what's happening today is the strongest are surviving, understanding that united we stand and divided we fall, and that's why you see a lot of unity here today on the Capitol steps.
Well, this has been an Air Olympia. Thanks a lot. With Air Olympia, and I am here with...
Hi, I'm Marta.
Marta, and she's an Evergreen student who is attending the rally against the budget cuts. And I was just wondering, what are your concerns and what are you trying to do about addressing your concerns?
Well, really, I'm here to just hand out apples and support all these kids who are out here protesting. I wasn't, I'm really concerned about the cuts to education funding because I'm a struggling student and I don't have health insurance. And I'm concerned about all the spending going to military funding, which I don't agree with yet. Hikes in tuition and cuts to social services.
You know, I think you've got it. You're doing more about it than most of these people who are lobbying and everything, because if we're going to ask the people who would rather spend all of our money on war and enslaving the world than, you know, affordable health care for children and education for students, then for, you know, something other than them spending money on war, then they're likely not going to listen to us. And all this energy could be spent on growing more apples and educating ourselves. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm down for growing more apples. Even though I'm not, you know, because of my personal experience in the past, I'm not really that into exhibitionist activism. However, I do think it's beautiful to see all these people out here exercising their democratic rights and see a lot of people gather today, which are not all agreeing on the same things, but we're still pretty much on the same page because we're all getting over by the government.
That sounds about right. Yeah, we definitely, before we're going to be able to do too much, like, before we're going to be able to grow enough apples to feed everybody, we're all going to have to come together and get on the same page at least somewhat. Well, thanks, Marta.
Yeah.